That's very important for all athletes. If your only marker of success is being the best, you're probably going to be very upset because not everybody gets to be the best.
When life's out of control, you got to stick with the things that are working and the things that do bring you peace.
What is going on? And he tells the people, I think she's having a stroke. And I was like, stroke? I'm 3 years old. I'm like, me? I was just bewildered.
I mean, what was the time frame between stroke to world championship?
6 weeks.
It's incredible.
After the stroke, I was like, I don't feel any pressure. If I suck, then I just had a stroke, so nobody can make fun of me for doing really poorly.
That's right. Ricardo's rules of resilience. Tune in, people. Every episode is impactful. You become more burly just by listening. Let's go.
Welcome, everybody, to Ricardo's Rules of Resilience podcast, a podcast that gives you the tools to withstand and recover from difficulties. Today, I am joined by a highly decorated world champion, elite racer, Tara Jackson. Tara has 5 podium finishes just last year in the elite level, and I think 4 of those were world titles. Have I gotten that right?
I had four world titles, but those were all my podiums. I only raced 4 times.
That's right. You're four races, 4 world championships in 2025, 11 podium finishes, 7 total world championships in DECA. Just an amazing, amazing resume. And you and I have gotten to know each other a little bit over the past few years. We'll talk about that in a second, but I just wanted to say welcome. We are so glad to have you, Tara.
Thank you for having me, Ricardo.
So I first met you. You might not remember this. It was back in Atlantic City when they were signing individual judges. And I think it was, I can't remember now. It might have been Mile I was assigned to you. And you didn't win that race. You had a solid race. Whichever one I was assigned to you, you didn't win.
That
and
one
the
was,
reason.
Meg won that race.
Yeah, that's right. So, the reason I remember that is because the next year I saw you in Dallas and I was like, hey, you know, how you doing? You don't remember me probably, but I was your judge at the Mile last year in Atlantic City. And you're like, oh, yeah, I didn't win that one. It's probably your fault.
It sounds like something I would say.
It was
the Mile
hilarious.
was just like Meg came on that one fresh. I mean, she's obviously an amazing athlete, but me and Alondra had both ran the fit the day before. I don't think it would have changed any of the results, but like she was well ahead of both of us. We were kind of jostling back and forth. But Alondra did, she was third at every single race in Atlanta, or second at every race. So the Mile was almost like her time, and then Meg took it from her.
The first thing I want to ask you to share with our listeners is just that. How do you withstand, your body withstand, racing at such a high level and your mind so frequently? You and I were discussing before we got started how those individual races, particularly the fit, just totally drain the body. They're very intense and they take everything, strength, power, cardiovascular, you know, muscular endurance, everything is totally taxed in those races. And for you to do something like you did last year in Florida, to race 4 times in 2 days and take first place in all of those, it's an incredible accomplishment. And I was on the course there as a judge for the Mile. And I, you know, just watching you do that, the incredible outpouring of energy. I remember you were in the lead there, I want to say somewhere around zone 5 or 6. And I was just like, wow, your performance was incredible. But I just didn't know, could you keep that level up for the rest of the race? And sure enough, you did. But would you just share with our listeners, what does it take mentally and physically for you to be able to have that kind of output?
Well, I feel like for the weekend, like, I think there's 2, like, answers to that question. For that weekend specifically, I don't know if I had shared with you or maybe you saw my social media. Probably like 6 weeks before that race, I had had a stroke and I didn't know if I was going to be able to race. My training was not like to the normal level that it was. Because after I left the hospital, I was medically cleared, but I still had a lot of like mental kind of blocks as far as like pushing myself hard and trying to lift hard, just out of like, you know, probably normal fear of something bad happening again. So for me, like racing DECA 2024 was like such a gratitude race. Like I was just so thankful, like to be there, to be healthy, and to be able to participate alongside of a bunch of other amazing women. But I think like long-term, as far as I think it takes a lot more like mental and physical resilience, like to compete year after year. And I think I've went a lot of like ebb and flows, like where I'll go through periods where I feel like my fitness is just not at the level that it was, or it shouldn't, or it should be. And then that could like last for months. And then all of a sudden, like I'll feel like some of my best fitness ever. And then you'll have good races and bad races. And I think that like just the, like there's just a will to compete and like challenge myself has kept me pretty consistent through competition all my life, from the time that, I mean, I started running when I was about 10 years old, 10 or 11. And I've been competitive ever since then. So I think just that love of, you know, pushing myself and seeing how far I can take this hybrid sport. Obviously, as it starts to get more popular and competitive, there are new people who are very talented and have, you know, whatever you want to say, like the it that lets us compete at this level. Because I think people like think that, oh, you just work hard. Like, obviously, I work really hard. And obviously, everybody who does this sport works really hard. But there's obviously a level of talent that's involved too. Mm-hmm. You don't just go out. Like, I like to compare it to running because I feel like running's like way more standard than like a Hyrox or a DECA race. Like, every, like if you run a 5K on the track, it's like exactly the same. Like some people, they go out and, you know, you have women who run like 15 minute 5Ks. And mm-hmm. unless I'm on rollerblades, there's no way ever that I'll run a 15 minute 5K. So everybody's starting point is different. Everybody's like, you know, potential is different. So that's why I like individual sports, is because you always can challenge yourself to be better. So even if I'm not the best at DECA or Hyrox, and like somehow I start to like fade off being at that elite level, I can always compete with myself. And I think that that's something that's very important for all athletes, because if you're always comparing yourself to the best, then ultimately, like, I think it's good for motivation, but if your only marker of success is being the best, you're probably going to be very upset, because not everybody gets to be the best. Not everybody gets to be the best all the time. So some days it might be my day. Some days it's somebody else's day. And I think that it's important to like measure success in different ways aside from just winning. Though winning is very fun. I do like to win, but I think that people can get discouraged or, you know, unmotivated when that's maybe their only marker of success, or they only find like happiness in winning, whether it's in sports or, you know, in your career or whatever. So I feel like you have to find different ways to measure success. Otherwise, you're probably going to burn out. You're not going to be happy with what you're doing. Because those ebb and flows will come, like I said before, like you're never going to be competing at your best all the time. And if we're only using winning as a marker of success, then I think a lot of people would probably stop racing.
Yeah. Yeah. It just starts working against you when I have to be perfect. I have to get first. I have to be, you know, be the winner in order to feel like it's worth it. And then it starts, Amber Tate and I were actually, she was a recent guest. We were talking about that very subject of how you can lose the joy of racing, and then it becomes so detrimental. Instead of something that's giving you life, it's taking life for you to be able to do something. It's backwards, right?
I do think, I mean, myself included, like put too much pressure, like undue pressure on ourselves, that mm-hmm. we think that everybody is like watching us, or like there's so much expectation on us, when really it's just coming from our own heads. Like, I guarantee you, I know you're into DECA and stuff like that, but nobody remembers probably that I won 4 championships last year. Obviously, I remember because I did it. But like, if you go ask people like who won the women's mile, they probably don't know. Like, nobody remembers these things. So, but in our heads, we play like, oh, it's like the biggest thing. Everybody knows. It's going to look so bad if I don't win or whatever. Like, but I think that we create this narrative in our own head that's so detrimental to our performance because we put all that pressure on ourselves. So it's important, obviously, you're going to have high expectations for yourselves, but when those expectations start creating like anxiety and frustration and they're negatively impacting your performance, then I think it's time to take like a step back and like remember why you got into racing, why you love racing, why it's important to you aside from just winning.
And you took some time to do that at the beginning of the year. Just get away. I think you went to Europe and just
Oh yeah,
take
I'm
a
always
breather.
I mean I was getting now I'm trying to do a little bit more in the HYROX scene. I feel like as it's gotten more competitive, I've maybe been in my own head a little bit, like am I still there? Am I like too old and beat up? And like 'cause the longevity of HYROX, I mean obviously you see people like Amy Belvacqua who's like 51 and she's still crushing it, but like I have to spend 30 minutes of doing mobility just to get into a deep enough squat to be acceptable for wall balls. So it's like I don't know like how far my body can push, if it can still keep up, and I think that's kind of the exciting part, like seeing if I can do those things, like maybe now I'm just like an age group racer for HYROX and I don't know that I'll be in the Elite 15, or maybe like this training block has went really well and when I race in a few weeks I'll surprise, well I don't think I'd surprise myself. I think that the fitness is there to run like a 61 or 62, but it's just putting it together. Like for me, especially mentally on race day, I know I've struggled a lot in the past with my mental game and I've which has been a huge hurdle for me and I'm sure a lot of other athletes. Just to like believe in yourself and that you can do those things. 'Cause sometimes it feels like when you haven't done something, it feels so much more unattainable. Like I was talking to somebody about last season, like I broke 18 for the 5K for the first time and I was like super pumped. But like in my mind, I've only done it once now. Like, but it's like, can I do it again? But before that, it was like, can I even do it? So I think that once you do things, it does get a little bit easier mentally because you know that you have the capability. Right now my best HYROX is 63. To like go into that 61, 62 range is like it feels like there is that level of like can I do this? But that's that's exciting. And that's I mean that's like that for everyone. I'm sure they have you have goals that you haven't attained yet. So striving for something that's ahead of you instead of something that you've done in the past, I feel like is always much more lofty feeling. Like you feel like it's more of a stretch kind of goal versus like attaining something maybe you've done before or coming back and doing something that you've done before.
How do you get yourself out of that space? You've been very open on social media about the things that will haunt your mind and start to chase you and bring you down, which I really appreciate the fact that as a highly decorated champion, somebody who can do something like win four world championships in four races in 2 days. Us mere mortals look to that and go, wow, they are totally different than us. You don't function like us. You're in another realm. And certainly your accomplishments are in another realm, but you're very upfront about the fact of, no, I struggle with the same thoughts and the same doubts, and they get to me. So would you just tell our listeners a little bit how you overcome those, how you fight through?
I mean, I don't know that we all like don't like overcome them. Like maybe we more like learn to live beside them. Like I think that we all have our doubts, whether it's like before, during, even when I accomplish something big, like it almost doesn't even feel like I take like pride in the things that I've accomplished, but it almost doesn't feel real. So I think I actually worked with a sports psychologist for a little while because I was getting to races and I am very math minded. Like everything I know, like I know what people run in HYROX. I know their sled times. I know like not just mine, how much like I lose in a certain station where I should be in regards to somebody else. So in some ways that's good. I'm very in tune with myself and the race and what's going on around me with all the other competitors, but everything's not a math equation. I don't know how they're feeling that day. I could be feeling off that day, but if I was getting put in positions where I was not where I was supposed to be in the race, like somebody's ahead of me on the sled that shouldn't be ahead of me, or 30 seconds behind where I should be on this at this part in the race, then it was really just like getting into my head. So working on like for me, working on like the things that I could control in the moment were really important. So breaking like if the one of the most the best things that I learned like for HYROX and DECA, if something bad happens, you got to immediately move past it. Your ski was 10 seconds off, like it's done, it's over. You got to focus on like what's coming next. Because if you let that kind of like mentality sit with you for the rest of the race, it's going to ruin your whole race. But if you only lose 10 seconds, like you still have 18 minutes of racing left, because most of the race is in the back half. So, but if you're carrying that kind of like mindset after an early station, it's going to really impact. I mean, there's been so many DECA fits that I've come in. Like, I don't come into the ski first, basically ever. Like, but, and if I let like where I am in the race at that moment, like determine, okay, well, like this is it, this is my placement, and I stayed there, like I would never win. But I know like there's so much more. Even like I just did DECA Carolina back in June, and I wasn't feeling my best. I didn't run. I think I ran my slowest time in like 3 years. But I had this constant mental battle because in my head I was like, I'm not where I'm supposed to be. But I had to keep checking in with, because Janelle was leading me the whole race, and I was like, you know you're close enough, like you know that you can make this happen, but you got to stop telling yourself you can't do it. Like, because if you keep telling yourself you can't do it, you're not going to do it. It's super easy. I think the next person behind me was not close. So it's super easy to sit in that like kind of mediocre space where you're like, okay, well, I got this locked up, like, and that's just fine. So somehow I was able to pull my head out of my butt and make a move on the sled. But like I spent like several stations just like in this self-doubt, mopey mood until I was like, well, this is just it. And I had a rough year last year with racing. It was not like, it definitely wasn't my plan. Like, I mean, DECA Worlds went really well, but all my other races were like very subpar, very mediocre. I left most of my races feeling like I'm never doing HYROX again. Like this is just it. I'm just gonna retire and do running. And but because it's hard when you stack too many like bad, mediocre performances in a row, because then you start to feel like, okay, this is where I am. But then you're where you are because you're putting yourself in that space. So if you're like, okay, well, this is all I got. This is I'm gonna run a 66, and that's just what it's gonna be. Then you kind of limit yourself to where you can go because you're stuck in this like little box that you've created for yourself.
You're just speaking a lot of truth of how we will live up to or down to expectations. And whether you think you can or you can't, you're usually right, as the old saying goes. So I was wondering if you would talk to us. One of the things I was really think inspirational to me, and I think inspirational to our listeners, if you'd be willing to just tell us a little bit about the stroke and coming back from that and what that took. Would you walk us through that process?
So it was really weird. I was driving to, I had woke up, I had just had the most amazing workout the night before. I have Wednesday night track practice, and I had just crushed this workout of like 5 by 5 minutes at VO2. And I was like, it was like one of those workouts where you're just like fist bumping and you're just like so excited. And I was getting ready to roll in. I finished that workout and I'd signed up for HYROX Chicago because I was like, you know, this is it. My fitness is here, and I've been having these string of like great workouts. So I was like, I'm gonna sign up for Chicago. And so I went to sleep as I normally do, and I got up and everything was fine. Like I go to Starbucks in the morning, and I like ordered a coffee. Well, I didn't order a coffee because I couldn't talk. So I went through the drive-through and I went to go talk. But in my head, I was like, totally fine. I was like, this is really weird. I must be tired. So I drove around again and I was like trying to talk and order my coffee. And I was like, huh, still, like me, I didn't think anything was wrong. I was just like, oh, I must be tired. So I drove into work, and there's another coffee place on my way to work. So I did the same thing, and I still couldn't talk. So I was like, huh, super weird. I guess I'm just not getting any coffee this morning. So that's fine. So I get to work, and I start doing some like scheduling and writing some workouts down. And like I could tell what I was trying to write was not what I wanted to write. So I'm like trying to write something, and it's like, that's not what I mean. Still, no clue that anything's wrong. I'm just like, huh, maybe I should go to the doctor. Like, but I'm going to work in the morning, and we'll figure this out later. So when my clients walked in, I trained these two older people that are married. And like the guy that I work with, he was like, yeah, I don't know. Like Tara's like, she's like not talking. Like she, and my client comes over to me, and I realize at that point I can't work. So I'm like, I just bust out into tears. And like my client who's older is like, clearly he knew what was going on, because when he said that I couldn't talk or write, my client was like, oh, get in the car, we're going to the hospital. Like, and he went in, and he ran in, and he got the wheelchair, and he wheeled me into the emergency room. And I'm still like, what is going on? And he tells the people, I think she's having a stroke. And I was like, stroke? I'm 4 years old. You're 33 years old. I'm like, me? Is this man having a stroke? I was just bewildered. And they took me back so fast and doing all these tests. And the guy, my doctor, they did the CT scan and stuff. And they were like, we need to give you this medication. And there is a 6% chance or something. Like you bleed into your brain and you die. And like, I have no advocates. They won't let my client come back with me because he wasn't related to me. I can't speak. Like I can nod, and you know, I can't write. So he's like, you need to decide right now. And I mean, his advice was I do it. So I did it. And I swear within 30 minutes, it was like nothing ever happened.
Wow.
They gave me the medication and busted up the clot that was hanging out in my brain that wasn't supposed to be there. And it was all of a sudden, I didn't even know that they were giving me the medication. I had already had an IV, and I guess they had pushed the medication through the IV, and I didn't realize it. And then I was like, in my head, I was like, I think I can talk. And then I started talking, and I was like, huh. So I was like, does this mean I have to get the medication? And they were like, oh, we've already given it to you. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I'm not dead, so that's good. But then I had to stay in the hospital for like a day. They kept me overnight, and then they discharged me the next day. They were like, you can work out. I mean, I went home. I did like a 20-minute like bike, and the next day I ran a few miles, and then it was honestly, it wasn't even real to me until I went to one of my follow-ups, and they show you like your MRI. And I guess when you have a stroke, like there's like a part of your brain that dies, and it's like, so there's this big black, or well, to me, it looked big, but apparently it wasn't that big, spot on my brain. And they're like, yeah, that's where you had the stroke. Before, it didn't even seem, I mean, it's like, oh yeah, they gave me medication, now it's fine. But I feel like that was like kind of like the, oh man, like something like really did happen. Like, and it's like right there in front of me. But they did all kinds of tests. I wore heart rate monitors and stuff. And like, they're like, oh, your heart's really good, and this is good. And I was like, so they never figured out like what caused it. I don't remember, some, maybe it was a doctor, or maybe I also have a number of friends that I run with that are like PAs and stuff. And one of them, I think, told me that actually a lot of stroke causes, they don't determine, they don't have a determination for why it happened. So I could have a stroke then and never have one again. Like I didn't have plaque in my brain. They said maybe I could have been dehydrated, which was weird because it was like, you know, I didn't do run practice, but it was cool that night. Like I live in Wilmington, North Carolina. So typically it's like a million degrees. Well, why wouldn't have this happened? Like, you know, when I'm like sweating like 8 pounds of fluids out in the middle of July, but they had like no calls. So, I mean, there was like some weird hangups that I had like right after. Like one of the things that was really like I had like an aversion to was like heavy lifting, because I was, what if I strain too hard? None of this was stuff they said I couldn't do. But it was something in my head that I was like, oh, I can't do that. And actually, I lost like 8 or 9 pounds from the time that it happened to I went to DECA Worlds. Because I think I just wasn't lifting. I didn't have much of an appetite, but, and I wasn't really training as much. So like, I was like, I don't know, maybe I was just real well rested. I had put in a lot of work before, obviously, that isn't going to go away overnight. So I feel like maybe I just came into worlds really rested. I had a talk with my coach the day before I raced, and I was not that I wasn't into the racing, but I was not really there so much mentally. But he was, you should be so grateful that you're here and that you're able to race, and like, you should just race with gratitude. And, you know, I feel like for some reason that really hit me. And I'm not normally like much of a crier, but like, I was teared up a little bit, and I was, you know what? You're right. I could not, I've seen, I think once you watch stuff, like social media is so terrible. But there's a girl that I follow her. She's a really good physical therapist, but her husband had like a massive stroke. I mean, he was in his 30s too. And he was in a coma for like 2 months, and he had to relearn how to walk, and doctors were telling him he wouldn't be able to do all these things. And something that doesn't like, you know, get too far from my mind even now, that, I mean, one, how lucky I am, but two, like how scary if it did happen again. My life is so physical that I couldn't even imagine not being able to do all the things that I do. So I think there's like a level of gratitude that, you know, that I had that I maybe never had before, because I was able to do things that I might not have been able to do if, you know, the stroke would have happened somewhere different in my brain that controlled like my motor skills or my, I don't know, like my ability to walk. I joke with my clients, well, you know, I mean, if it's at least going to take something, it can take my ability to articulate or talk or whatever. Just as long as I can still move, I'm good. But because it was weird, I did have a lot of like cognitive issues, like right after, like, you know, just finding the right words for like things to say. And but all that got better with time. And I guess they say that the rest of your brain will take over. If you have like an injury to your brain, like the stuff around it will like pick up the deficits. So I think it did pretty good as far as like my overall recovery, but
that is just amazing. I mean, what was the time frame between stroke to world championship?
Like 6 weeks.
It's incredible.
And I think I did a DECA strong. It must have been 2 or 3 weeks after the stroke, because there was one in Wilmington. Like, and I was like, oh well, I mean, it's here. I'm gonna see if I can even do this right now. Like, you know, I don't want to go to worlds and run 15 minutes and like, you know, be last or something, you know. I was like, well, let me see what I can do. And I ran 12 flat. Like, I ran the fastest strong that I've ever done. And again, I feel like part of that was like maybe the pressure, like we talked about after the stroke. I was like, I don't feel any pressure. If I suck, then I just had a stroke, so nobody can like make fun of me for doing really poorly. Not that they would anyways, but I feel like it gave myself permission to just relax. And when I was able to do that, I was able to perform at my best time ever. And it helped. I had like a lot of friends and support around, and racing at home is always a lot easier than like traveling somewhere to race. So it was cool.
That is such a remarkable story. Gratitude, relaxation were your secret weapons to 4 world championships in 2 days. Amazing.
Hopefully, well, I don't have to experience any gratitude like that anymore, but I'm good. I'm good with that one time kind of ordeal.
I get it. Of course, I guess we can all continue to find the things to be grateful, even if we haven't just very nearly averted disaster, because we still have the ability to speak and to motor around, and we're not bedridden. We have that every day, even if we're not consciously aware of, that could have been me. I could have just lost all that yesterday. I mean, if it can happen to an elite professional athlete at 33 years old, it can happen to anybody.
I actually saw there was another, it was a young female Olympic level track and field athlete. She was a field athlete. I don't know if she's like shot put or discus or something like that. But she had a stroke. Hers was really mild, like mine was, and as far as like effect long term. But I don't know. It's just wild. Like, you feel, and I think that was the thing that was hardest for me, is like, you feel so powerless because you feel like you do all the things right. And then, you know, something still happens. You take so much care in your health, and then, you know, something that you feel like shouldn't happen to you does. Like, I think it's one of those time moments in your life too, where you can be like, well, you know, not everything in life is fair, but like, what are you going to do about it? This is your circumstance. And I actually have a client that I train that's she has MS and she's really inspiring to me. I think she was diagnosed in her mid-20s and she is one of the hardest working people I've ever met and she never lets her circumstance dictate what she can do. I would like to think that would be me if something were to happen. Sorry. Said I wasn't. Yeah. But she's a real inspiring person and somebody I really look up to.
Yeah, I think that is the case, that the people who have been dealt the hardest hands and have the most to overcome are the ones we look up to the most. When you're describing being in the hospital, no loved ones around to help you, you're not able to articulate anything to the doctors. They're telling you 6% chance of dying. I mean, that's just over 1 in 20. That's not
It's not
minuscule.
nothing. Yeah, it's not nothing.
Yeah, as you're describing it, I'm just terror. I can picturing terror. You know, if I were in that situation, I would be absolutely terrified. How did you deal with that?
I think a lot of me just like pushed it. Like in the moment, obviously I was very like emotional and like I didn't I there was a lot there were several nurses that were like very, you know, like motherly, like caring, compassionate. You know, that's more of their job, I guess, than the doctor. But I feel like after it, I almost like tried to push it like down, like it didn't happen. I just need to continue my life the way that I was living it before. And I think like there's a lot of good to that, because I can't control if something else happens. I can't control like I can do what I can to control the things that I can, but I'm not gonna live in a way that I'm like scared to live. A lot of my clients were like, oh, it must be the exercise. It must be you're exercising too hard. You're going at it too hard. I'm like,
No.
if the doctors would have told me that was the reason, like I would dial back, you know, but they're not telling me these things. And I feel like even actually recently I had what I'll call an episode where I'm currently like getting some more testing done to see like maybe what's going on. But the doctors think like maybe like some seizure activity from where the stroke happened. But when I work out and when I run, like that's when I feel the most normal. Like I feel like these things that I can't control, if I sit around, it's like all I think about, and I don't think that that's very healthy. So I feel like I can control my workouts, I can control my effort, and like just leaning into the things that I do enjoy is really the only thing we can do.
Yeah. You know, I really appreciate that. That is such great advice. And I hope all the listeners that are maybe they're driving to work right now or doing the dishes or different things people do when they listen to a podcast or maybe even working out. But maybe you might want to pause and write that down. When life's out of control, you got to stick with the things that are working and the things that do bring you peace and not abandon them, because so many times when life's getting to us, that's when we're most tempted to just, well, you know, and give up and I'll get back to that tomorrow. But you're saying, no, don't sit in it. Don't let that water keep boiling around you.
Yeah,
Get back
because
to
I
the
feel
things
like
that are working.
for people who, I mean, I have a very active mind. I think of anything that can go bad. And I have every scenario of which it could. So I feel through exercise, it helps silence those kind of like fears or whatever you want to call them. And I think for a lot of people that have the same fears, exercise is such a great like way to calm yourself, to calm your mind. I know, I mean, I'm sure you've heard in the OCR hybrid community about Rylan, and it was just a really rough day for me yesterday. Obviously, he's a amazing person, and he's going to be greatly missed by a lot of us. But just to go out and run for, you know, an hour, just to stop thinking about everything that's going on around me and all the bad stuff, and just be able to focus in on your effort and focus on what you're doing in the moment, and just kind of let your mind like be quiet for a moment. I think it's one of the most powerful things that we can do, it to help our mental health. And when things get tough and you know you're just having a bad day, and nothing feels better than just going out for a run and trying to forget all of it for at least a minute.
Definitely the loss of Rylan, even just a bad day at work. I was having an incredibly stressful day the day before that and couldn't get to my workout till 8 o'clock at night. And I finally went to do it, and I think about 8 or 9 minutes in, I'm feeling better now. I'm starting to feel like I can manage it. It is amazing If we'll just stick to the stuff, as they say, when you're going through hell, keep on going. Don't slow down. It's the time to keep going.
I mean, I feel like that's the case for a lot of workouts. Sometimes too, like you don't want to do them, and then you get to moving, and you get started, and you feel so much better once you're in it, and then once you're done. I mean, obviously, as a trainer, I think that's one of my biggest. Once I can get my clients going, they always feel better afterwards, and they're always happy that they finish. But sometimes it's just that like push to get started is hard.
Well, Tara, as our time comes together, I just want to say I'm so grateful for you taking the time to share with all of us your stories of resilience. And if people want to get a little more Tara Jackson in their lives, how could they reach out to you?
I'm on Instagram, Tara Nova Trainer. So.
And are you accepting clients currently?
No. I'm very busy right now. I'm trying to balance, you know, work life with athlete life. And it's definitely really tough. I mean, I'll spend probably 36 to 40 hours training my clients here. And then I have another 10 or so clients that I train online. So I stay pretty busy along with my 15 to 16 hour training weeks. I thought that online coaching would help me alleviate some of that. But for some reason, people keep telling people that I train people in Wilmington and then more people come. So I had to cap it off. So I'm not taking any more clients as of now.
Well, your incredible accomplishments speak for themselves. So it's no wonder that you have a line of people that want to train with you. That's a wonderful problem to have and a testimony to what you've done.
Thank you.
Well, thank you everyone for tuning in to Ricardo's Rules of Resilience, the podcast that gives you the tools to withstand and recover from difficulties. Be resilient.
Season 3 of Ricardo's Rules of Resilience podcast is brought to you by Triple R Nutrition. Triple R Nutrition is a very clean, very pure way for you to get all the nutrition you need. It doesn't matter if it's whey that I'm holding right here, creatine, daily multivitamins, fat burners, rest, sleep, anything you need. Very clean. It's very pure. But it doesn't just stop with how much it does for your body. This line of supplements was designed specifically to support the Envision La Fuente ministry in the country of El Salvador that takes disadvantaged youth and offers them a brighter future through education. Be a part of doing great things for your body and doing great things in the world. Triple R Nutrition. See in the show notes exactly the link to click on and get everything you need to help yourself and help the world be a better place. As always, if you need coaching in resilience or in your hybrid racing, get a hold of us. We love to hear from our listeners. Give us feedback on the show. You can reach out to me at coach.ricardo on Instagram or Ricardo Molinax on Facebook.